Are you insane?
They are insane!
You may still choose to walk away from this future. But if you take the crystal, your fate will be sealed forever. There will be no escaping it.
Oh, I think there will be. Hi, my name is Mike McCafferty. I have a podcast called I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek. And I do like to talk about Star Trek. And I like to watch Star Trek. And I like to comment and sometimes ridicule and sometimes venerate Star Trek. And so you know, as an erstwhile listener of this podcast, that every once in a while something vexes me. Something irritates me. Well, quite often, something vexes and irritates me. And so when you heard that phrase, I'm wondering if you were thinking to yourself, I wonder if Mike had a problem with that. Maybe not on a conscious level, on a subconscious level, you thought to yourself, there's something odd about that phrasing. There's something odd about this. Now, it is couched in something wonderful and beautiful and brilliant that happened in that episode in the Valley of the Shadows, second season, 12th episode of Star Trek Discovery. But it was something which kind of made the hairs in the back of my neck sort of stand up a little bit. And I couldn't quite figure out why, but I've been slowly mulling it over. And it is a small thing, and yet it is a powerful thing. It is an important thing, an important distinction that I need to separate from that bothers me a little bit about this episode of Star Trek. There's a lot about this episode of Star Trek which bothers me. First of all the Klingon nonsense between Laurel and Vok is stuff that no one is tracking. The stuff with control, it feels, I mean, I understand now that it's now dovetailing into what the Red Angel was, but in the beginning of the season, we had this beautiful construct of there are seven mysterious signals out there in the cosmos. We don't know what they are, but we're going to find out because the universe is at stake. Go to different planets, piece together this puzzle, and as you do it, each stop, find out a little bit more about yourself through these different planets and the way that they carry themselves about, either functionally or dysfunctionally, and you, either functional or dysfunctional. It was a great premise for a second season, and the most important thing is that we finally had a captain, a real captain, not a mirror universe captain, not an evil captain or a captain who had all sorts of duplicitous motives, or a captain who was elevated into the rank when he has threat ganglia, which makes him second-guess stuff. No, a captain. What Star Trek has been predicated on, that there is a person at the top and heavy is the head that wears the crown. Kirk, Picard, Sisko, Janeway, Archer, and before all of them, Captain Christopher Pike. And they pulled a brilliant move by pulling him off the bench and saying, you know what, we're going to need a pinch hitter for this season because we're having some problems. We've gone through too many captains. We don't know how to make this show work without a captain. So we're going to pull someone from the past, someone from the future, and put him in charge of Discovery just for a little while, just for a season, as it seems. And it was a brilliant move. Such a great move, because we know who he is. He is a known quantity in the pilot. And is the cage now canon? It's hard to tell. I mean, the Menagerie certainly is, or maybe it's not. Who knows? Maybe the original series is no longer going to be canon anymore. That's something which more and more people seem to be accepting as a reality, that the original series was just a series of stories told to amuse your captain. That in fact, the exploits, the three seasons of Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and others were just merely tales to be told. And they didn't really unfold like that. They didn't unfold those colorful costumes and gray interiors. No. No, the real way it unfolded is in these bright, flashy sets, with shiny floors and holograms and all sorts of stuff. That is the true future. We must eradicate the past in order to build the future. It's avant-garde. But be that as it may, they did pull in Christopher Pike, who is a known quantity. And what a brilliant move that has been all season, because every time he is on screen, I am happy. And maybe I'm Maybe I am an old-fashioned person, but the track record for Star Trek having captains is really, really good. It is 100%. There are no captains, maybe Genevieve Bourgeois, which they got rid of after the first day of shooting Star Trek Voyager. Maybe that was a misfire. Maybe even Pike was a misfire. Maybe Jeffrey Hunter shouldn't have been the first captain. But regardless, what is on screen is excellence at every stage. And Star Trek Discovery played around with different non-captains and having Michael Burnham be the center of the show, and she still is, and it really is a wobbly sort of storytelling mode, because at the end of the day, you always have to go to the captain, and if the captain is unreliable or incompetent, then the whole ship is unreliable and incompetent. You have a problem. You have a mutiny brewing every single episode. So they pulled deep. They contacted CBS and said, we want to rent out Pike. How much does it cost? This is Bad Robot. And they gave him Pike. And damn it, he was good. He is good. And he's good in this episode. This nonsensical episode with Laurel and Control and all this sort of stuff. And what he has to do, he has to go down to planet Boreth, which I believe we've seen in Star Trek Next Generation, where Kalis was born, second Kalis. And he has to go get, and I have a hard time saying this, but that's okay because that's what's going on in this episode. The time crystals. Time crystals. Could they have not come up with a better name than time crystals? It seems like a fourth grader's assignment to come up with some sort of interesting fictional story. And then the time crystals saved the monkey. No, I want something. So I want technobabble. I want a transitive polyhexagonal tachyon-emitting field which will reverse the chronotons. That's what I want. I don't want time crystals. Time crystals sounds like Lord of the Rings. Just like midichlorians from Star Wars sounds like Star Trek. And when you mix them, people immediately go, whoa, whoa, what? And it would have been fine if they would have just kind of let that go, like, oh, we use some time crystals. I mean, remember, I believe it was Mudd who said, I found time crystals. And we're like, oh boy, all right, time crystals, we'll let that slide. But somehow that has become an intrinsic part of this season's storytelling. Time crystals power the Red Angel suit, which Michael Burnham's mother has been flying around because the Klingons attacked, and she was catapulted into the future. And then she tried to stop Control by putting that giant planet in front of the Discovery, which in fact created Control. We've got all sorts of problems here. But with Pike, it's all been good. And it has been good. And then we get this wonky scene here where he has to go get this time crystal to power up the Red Angel suit so Michael Burnham can blah, 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 blah. Okay. He goes out on the planet. And he meets this Legolas character, like Laurel's and Vok's son, who has grown up in the course of, like seven episodes, really. But time is strange here, and you plant a seed, and a tree grows up in 5 seconds, and sure, why not? Everything is on the menu here, isn't it? Because we got time crystals. Time crystals do everything. And for some reason, they found it necessary to have Laurel and Vok's son having grown up, and they gave him a name because in the B story, Laurel and Vok were upset that he would become an unnamed one, but he gave himself a name. So sure, I guess it's all okay. That's an important part of the story, isn't it? Anyways, he leads him on this bridge of time, leads our erstwhile Captain Christopher Pike on this bridge of time to the key of the past and the key of the present and the key of the future. And again, it is sounding like Adventure from Atari, where I had to get the three different keys to get the chalice in order to defeat the dragons, which looked like ducks. They look like ducks. I'm getting to my point here. I understand that. I understand where you're saying, what is this all about? Why are you recapping this with such anger, which is mitigated by your love for their insertion of Pike into the story? Well, I teased it, didn't I? I played that little clip where Captain Pike is led to these time crystals that are growing out of these non-time rocks. who cultivates those? Do you water them? I don't understand. What, like, do they just grow out of the ground? Do you excavate around them? You built a little temple on there, but since it's time, how long did it take? Did you build it yesterday? Who knows? And he's about ready to grab it when our Aragorn says, "All right, if you grab it, then your fate is sealed." And Pike kind of gets this kind of preview of what's going to happen, which we know what is going to happen to Pike. The wonderful, terrible thing about having Pike here is that we know his fate. And it is tragic. Even if you don't watch any of Discovery, his fate is tragic because we see what happens. He's a strong, healthy captain who then, through an accident of saving cadets, becomes horribly scarred and placed into a giant Roomba. It looks more like a Roomba now. I have to go to that joke. And by the way, if you haven't been down to the Facebook page, check out the Facebook page. We have all sorts of cool stuff, funny stuff we put up there. We have discussions. It's a good place. But he gets into this. He goes through this. He must suffer this. We know that in his future, in our future, he suffers this. And he will be confined to this strange wheelchair. At least in the original series. Not in the Kelvin. But this crazy monster wearing a hood tells him that if you grab this time crystal, your fate is sealed. And that is what bothered me. Star Trek is not built upon fate. It is built upon the free will of intelligent human beings and aliens doing the best they can and creating their own destinies, their own futures. When this monster told him, if you grab onto this time crystal, there is no way you can escape your fate, that bothered me. Because Star Trek, over and over and over again, has proven to us that you can change your fate. That time is mutable. I mean, first of all, in the 2009 movies, they have directly shifted off. Again, Captain Pike's fate in the 2009 series is that he will be captured by Nero and, like, have bugs put in his body and become crippled because of that. And then he goes around in kind of a semi-regular chair and then gets killed later on by fake Khan. Is that the fate he should have? Because it's already been proven that he can change his fate. There are many different examples of characters in Star Trek changing their fate, of fighting against what the future may be. I mean, already we have in The City on the Edge of Forever, they go back in time to change stuff. They don't just accept it. They don't just say, this is what is supposed to happen. Think about Generations with the Nexus and Kirk and Picard trapped in the Nexus in this beautiful world here. And that should be their fate. This is what has happened to them. And yet they fight against these exterior forces. See, my problem with fate is that fate sort of supposes that your life is going to be locked in by some stronger power. Fates are literally like these Greek mystical forces, these gods who choose what you do. You have no ability to choose for yourself. And yet time and time again in Star Trek, that has been proven wrong. They literally went up against Apollo, the god Apollo, and defeated him. That is the most direct way I can tell you that fate in Star Trek does not exist. Fate in other series, yes. In Star Wars is all about fate. Star Wars, you are born into your legacy. You are born to be a Jedi. In The Matrix, Neo was born to become the One. In Harry Potter was born to be the Harry Potter. These things are ordained by a larger force which controls them and assigns them a fate. But in Star Trek, you always have an opportunity to go against the grain because you're a human who can think and who can feel and who can love. And as long as you're alive, you have a chance. Star Trek IV. They go back in time. They save the whales. Mirror, mirror, they go back. They go to the alternate universe and they affect that universe. You can change these things. Now, the biggest example could probably be Star Trek Deep Space Nine, right? Where the emissary, Sisko is the emissary. He is he is taken to the wormhole and talked to by these creatures. Now, it would be easy to call them gods. And in fact, initially Star Trek Deep Space Nine tried to sort of intimate perhaps they were these higher powers. But at the end of the day, they called them wormhole aliens. They're not gods. They don't control our fates. And even if they do, they are actively influencing it through science, through something we don't understand, which we attribute to magic. Not through some all-encompassing god or some mystical force which is going to force us into one specific timeline. I know I'm parsing this. I know I'm being so pedantic about this and so granular, but it is important. If Pike knows that this is his fate, if he has to accept this, then I don't know if he's necessarily or truly the Star Trek captain that he has to be. If he is presented with an option that says there is no way you can change this, then I question the writers on that. And I say, how can this be Star Trek if a future or a past is presented to you and you do nothing to change it? Doesn't Star Trek demand that you do everything you can to create a better future? That's what Star Trek's all about. It's all about taking that risk and creating a better future, even when the odds seem insurmountable. So if some goofball on planet Boreth wearing a cape and having a crazy cheese grater neck tells you your fate is sealed, I'd say, screw you. I know how to get out of this. I'm going to do everything I can. First of all, you've shown me I'm not going to be in that radiation thing. I'm going to say, hey, everybody, today we're not going to be in there. We're just going to go ahead and sit this one out. What is it, in Terminator, no fate but the one we make? Now, of course, there's been 5 or 6 different iterations where they've, you know, constantly gone back and had the world being destroyed by the Terminators, but you get what I'm saying. In fact, they're even going back and changing that. In fact, that is exactly my point, is that Linda Hamilton's going to come back and be in the new Terminator movie, and she says, hey, you know what the other ones? Forget about them. Forget about them. Now, I will allow the idea that time in the Star Trek universe tries to heal itself. That has been explained in both Sitting on the Edge of Forever and in the 2009 movie, that time tries to fix whenever there has been sort of a rupture in it. And if that's the case for this, then I understand that. But I don't buy into the fact that if you do this, then there's no way to get out of it. If you touch this time crystal, then all of your intellect, all of your strength, all of your hope, all of your love cannot change your fate. It is a beautiful and tragic ending for Christopher Pike. I grant you that. But now that he knows, how can he not fight against that? How can he just accept his fate? How can any Starfleet captain accept their fate if they know that it's going to end up tragically? For us, the audience, it is beautiful. And again, I will say that it is such a beautiful ending for him that we have now closed the loop on Captain Pike. Unless, of course, CBS decides to do a Captain Pike series, which they seem to be moving towards a little bit. They built that whole Enterprise set. They built it for some reason. That was an expensive set to build. They got to be thinking about something, don't they? But for him to say, this is it, it just feels weird. It doesn't feel like Star Trek. And maybe it's not my Star Trek anymore. Maybe now there are going to be time crystals and all sorts of magic wands and all sorts of space gods that are going to be really gods. That's fine. If that's what Star Trek is to become, that's fine. It's not necessarily my Star Trek. And my fate is to say that I don't believe in that. And I will fight to make it better. And that's what I'm doing. All right, thank you for listening. I will leave you with the final words of Captain Pike as he rationalizes his way to grab onto this time crystal, which I think we can apply to me rationalizing not allowing things like this to happen on a show that I enjoy, that I've enjoyed for my entire childhood and adult life without time crystals, because I'm Mike McCafferty. I just want to talk about Star Trek.
No. I'm not going to abandon the things that made me who I am because of the future. It contains an ending I hadn't foreseen for myself. No. Give it to me.
Destruct sequence completed and engaged.
Don't you understand?
When the train comes in, everybody rides.
Your daddy can put them up, can he?
I meant to say that it should be hauled away as garbage.